Our next case, in re interest of Alex F. and Tony F. In re interest of Alex F. and Tony F. Mr. Stover.
Good morning, Your Honor. Please, the court. My name is Ryan Stover. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Stratfordley Dole, Carlson & Bittner in Norfolk. I represent the father in this case. This is an appeal from, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Counsel, can I?
I'm sorry.
I should have clarified with you. We have two parties arguing.
Okay.
Is there an agreement among the mother and father as to time split?
I think we can split it 5 minutes apiece.
Five each? Okay. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I started to talk before I probably should have.
And I should have asked first. So, Shelley, do you just want to start over? What's that? So five each?
Counsel is suggesting that I take a little bit more time. Can we just use the full 10 minutes and then, or if I use most of the time, I think counsel will be okay.
I would think that'd be appropriate, Your Honor. If he would, whatever he has left, I can then because he was the leader.
All right. So start at 10. Sorry to interrupt you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, good morning. My name is Ryan Stover. I'm an attorney with Stratton, DeLay, Dole, Carlson, and Bittner, Norfolk. I represent the father in this case. This is an appeal from September 9th, 2014, journal entry and order from a review hearing before the Madison County Court sitting as the juvenile court. At that hearing, the parties came into the hearing with a case plan that had been submitted by the Department of Health and Human Services. No objections were filed to that case plan. Prior to the hearing, parties arrived, all parties together, joined together in asking that the case plan be adopted and compliance ordered. And then as the hearing continues on, there becomes some discussion about an event that had happened the week prior involving the juvenile Tony at Tony's school with some destruction of property. The suggestion is made by the court at that point in time that maybe we should start thinking about alternative placements for Tony. The case plan itself did not recommend such alternative placement. In fact, what it recommended was case closure in 3 months if there were no major issues. So this discussion about alternative placement starts to roll. Objections are made by trial counsel, myself, trial counsel maybe isn't the right word, but both of us, both mother and father's counsel at the time of the hearing, as far as any immediate placement, the judge sort of makes a suggestion at that point in time that what he's thinking is he's going to recommend that the department consider an alternative placement and then come back, notice it in for a hearing, and allow the parties to take a position. The Department of Health and Human Services worker at about that point in time makes a suggestion to the court that if that were to happen, that she believed, and this wasn't under oath and it wasn't evidence, that if that were to happen, then she believed that the rehabilitative efforts would be undermined by the father, specifically my client. And so the ball rolls on, and the final decision is the judge enters an order that removes Tony from the parental home, where he had been for most of the history of this case, removes him from the parental home based on that outburst at the school, and puts him in a respite. And so that is what our appeal is based on, that order.
Was the report that was submitted by the department completed and submitted for review by counsel prior to the episode with Tony at school the week before?
It was, Your Honor.
Does that make any difference?
Well, to answer that, I guess I would make this suggestion. The original petition in this case was a petition that said that the parents, based on housekeeping skills, were providing a dirty environment to the kids, and that's where the services were initially focused on. What we have, and I think that's what the case plan in a way is trying to address, here we have an outburst that happens outside of the house, at school, doesn't directly involve the parents. And so I don't see that there is, and maybe I'm not answering your question.
No, you're fine.
But I don't see that there's a factual nexus between what happened at the school and some sort of proof or evidence that Tony's health, safety, and welfare is in jeopardy if he remains in the home.
Well, this would be after adjudication.
That's absolutely correct.
So really the issue that the court's looking at is more than just the housekeeping problems. They're looking what's in the best interest of the child. And wasn't there evidence to show that the parents did not continue on with some of the progress that had been made during the previous school year to keep Tony in a disciplinary situation?
That is true. That was the position of the case plan.
And so is that something that the court should not have considered based upon the fact that the adjudication was based upon just the cleanliness of the house and that sort of thing?
I don't maybe mean to suggest that. However, I think that it's problematic for all of the parties to come into a hearing on the understanding that nobody's objected to a case plan which suggests case closure in 3 months, and then all of a sudden, by the end of the hearing, the juvenile is removed.
Is there anything that establishes that the parties were not aware of this incident that took place approximately a week before the hearing?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The argument that we're presenting is really twofold. It's a due process argument. The idea that somebody's care and custody of their own child is a fundamental right that should be provided due process protections. You know, and without going over all the facts again, here we don't have adequate notice, more or less. The second argument is abuse of discretion. Even if we assume that this was within judge's discretion to do this, what we think would have been appropriate for him to do is do what he suggested earlier on in the hearing, that I'm not going to make this change effective immediately, but I'm going to ask that the department consider an alternative placement and then allow the parties an opportunity to be heard on a revised case plan or a case plan that suggested some sort of different outcome. So I see that I have about 4 minutes left. I would like to leave some time for Mr. Alvin if there aren't any other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Mark Albin. I'm arguing as the cross-appellee. I represent Shelley, the mother in this case. Mr. Stover has, I think, quite adequately explained that it's a due process argument that is submitted. The event that happened was 12 days prior to this hearing. And we have a 3A petition that was before the court, not a 3B, and no other petitions came up at this hearing. It was just on this case alone. And notwithstanding, when you go through the hearing, there were still no objections from the guardian ad litem and the state. But only after the judge ruminates and wonders whether he should have a hearing, that he's concerned about, quote, saving his child because there appears to be some problems out there. But I would submit that we are, again, standing on the fact that this comes up when everybody came to this court. I would submit I wasn't the trial counsel. Having this information that something had happened at school, arguably an act of juvenile delinquency, but no petition was filed, no suggestion of another petition, prior to the judge deciding where he was going and the prosecutor agreeing, did they then go down that path and there were objections and the court decides, as I know the court has broad discretion, but my client would submit that was exceeded, that broad discretion exceeded, because there should have been a due process component. How hard would it have been for those that make decisions on juvenile petitions to file something or inform the court we need a hearing in 1 week to proceed? We have to follow procedures, especially when it comes to writing briefs to the Court of Appeals, and all we're asking for is something that has an appropriate nexus. 12 days prior, something happened, and yet everybody was of the mindset that the child could go home, and I would submit that there was no imminent suggestion of a threat to the child in the home at that point, and no petition had been brought. I know the court had broad discretion, but it's interesting to note that you have a court looking at something that had been looked at prior to by a prosecutor, a guardian ad litem, department, and still everybody was saying, go home. We're submitting that at the very least, the court should have followed its initial suggestion to go down that path, So I have some concerns here and request that a hearing should be had and allow for at least a proper presentation of hearing as opposed to just a writing before the court. Other than what I have submitted and in my written brief and what Mr. Stover has submitted, I think it's clear where we are going and what we are presenting to the court. And with that, I would ask the court just to give serious consideration to the due process argument submitted and make an appropriate decision of a reversal. With that, I have nothing further.
Counsel, would you agree that it appears that the county court judge sitting as a juvenile court judge was concerned about where this child is placed?
Oh, he clearly had concern. He expressed that. It's very clear the judge had concern.
So if he would have decided to go the process that you're expressing, then he continued the matter, and where would the child remain during that period of time?
I guess we don't know. That's a good question. Would he have removed the child at that point? I know that, I think the record shows, prior to this hearing, nobody expected a removal. Could the child have gone back home? The child had been at home for 12 days after that event on August 28th till the time of court. I would have submitted that he probably would have gone home, but that is, again, a speculation. Does the court have the broad authority? We have to, or the broad discretion? We have to acknowledge it. But again, in light of the way that it played out with everybody, apparently the parties all understanding what was out there, there nonetheless was a recommendation of 3 months and go forward.
But so weren't those recommendations made prior to the incident that took place at school?
Well, I don't know for a fact, but I believe that they were in that case plan. But nothing within the Bill of Exceptions shows that there was any change in their position until the judge said, I'm thinking about this, I've got concerns, and then he proceeds to go down a path, that, and only then did the prosecutor decide to join him in his path.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good day. My name is Gail Collins. I'm the deputy of Madison County. And I will probably use about 8 minutes and reserve the balance for the guardian who joins in as a tele. A couple of points. First of all, I think there's a misreading in the brief for the brief for the father about section 42285. There is no longer that section of burden and presumption as to brief counsel for the mother. He relies upon 43266 and 43248. Those are pre-adjudication provisions and not applicable. There's a couple of interesting points in this case, and this is not a dirty house case per se. As the court is well aware, in Title M, the condition of the house is merely a manifestation of the parents' inability to properly care for the child or children. It's also interesting, though, that the case by court report was prepared before the incident at school, but there's a number of points that arise of it. The recommendation for 3 months was not because there was progress being made, but rather because we had two parents that were totally not amenable to services. And this incident happened after the case by court report was done. But there had been other incidents. And the court plan also indicated that there was no rules, no structure, no consequences in the family home, which reflected in the outside aggressive and violent behaviors of this child. There was a litany of transgressions by the parents in failing to do therapy, individual family, not doing anger management, not refusing to do all those things.
Excuse me, counsel. But all those things were true prior to the incident at school.
Yes.
And yet, the report from the department recommended that the child return home, and everybody else seemed to agree. So I don't understand. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I understand what the evidence shows, but I'm having a problem in ascertaining why it was okay to send the child home before the incident at school.
Obviously, but then, we don't have the full record, but it was a problem of there was just no foster homes that are willing to take these high-maintenance children. That's the truth of the case. These kids were sent home because they had huge behaviors, so we put in The department put in intensive family preservation, extensive family sports, in the belief that that's what we have to do. There was no foster care placement available for it. So these kids were returned. And one is lower functioning, and the other one has huge behaviors. And those behaviors were noted throughout. But it was still a case that the department was saying, what do we do here? We're recommending three months. We've already been in this case 18 months, and we have parents who are doing nothing. And then we have this explosive incident, which is a reflection of the lack of parenting, the lack of structure, discipline, and consequences in the home of parents who refuse to do anything. So that's what we are faced with, and the judge, I think, quite rightly, used his discretion. He was, I think, tired of dealing with a situation where nothing was happening and nothing was done for the best interest of his child. And that's what he basically did. He said, I have to make a decision, and he certainly had the authority under 43-285 to place that child out of the home in conjunction with 43-295. And that's what he did. He looked at the best interest. It was post-adjudication by at least 12 months. We were actually at the 18 months of the case at that point. So I think you have to look at the totality of the case. And I think he certainly didn't abuse his discretion. And the concern of the department, albeit it was one of those hearings that revolved, and of course juvenile court is the summary court. You deal with the issues that come before the court. The judge was faced with the issue, and HHS is, if we left that child in the home, then the parents were going to basically intervene or interfere with any possible placement and the best interest of that child in the interim. So I think it required an emergency or immediate placement.
I'm sorry, I'm not completely familiar with this record, so I may be asking you something that is obvious that I just missed. The record doesn't disclose what actually happened to this child, do it?
The child was placed out of the home and has been out of the home ever since. I appreciate that. It doesn't.
But doesn't show us where, or we don't know if it's a foster home or what exactly it is, do we, in the record?
It's not in the record, but the child is at Boys County.
So do we have a situation here that, based upon what you've said today, that the department would like to have placed the child at a foster home, but none was available, but once the judge ruled that you must do it, they found a place to put the child or children? Is that what you're saying to us?
I think there need to be an out-of-home placement. And I appreciate, I did file a supplemental supplemental press meet for transcript, which showed that there was a placement in a foster home and that didn't work out, and then there was a subsequent placement. And this child has been continued to be placed at the home since then. There's also, and it's not before the court's record, I appreciate, but there's juvenile petitions particular to the juvenile. So yeah, it's a very complicated picture, and obviously the court is left with the limited issue of was there abuse of discretion, and the state would submit based upon the evidence that was before the court, based upon the length of time that the department had been involved, the incident that the school being reflection, the department believes, and the court believed, of the parents' lack of progress.
Again, I need to ask you about what's in the record, because
And I appreciate that. But
nothing in the record, is there, that says the department was unable to find a placement for this child outside of the home at this point, a foster home, and therefore that's why we're recommending that the child be returned home?
There have been, in the history of it, there should be in the case by court report a statement of where the child had been before.
Right.
So there is some record of that in the case by court report. That's attached.
But you indicated here that the reason why the department and everybody signed off on the department's report is because there wasn't a proper placement for the child outside of the home.
No.
Did I misunderstand?
No. The comment in the recommendation by the department was basically that they recommended, even though there's no progress and there's been extensive services in this case, that it's recommending a 3-month review because the department felt it couldn't do much when you had parents that were totally against any kind of services and weren't amenable to them. So it was a case of, yeah, there are issues in the home, but what can we do when we have the children in the home and when parents are not doing anything or not capable, indeed, as is the evidence of the mother. Sorry, Your Honor. We will reserve the rest.
Shelley, Ms. Collins, before you take your seat, Mr. Eastland, did you file a brief in this case?
Yes, Ms. Collins and I filed a joint brief. We both put our names on it. We worked on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Brad Eastland. I'm with Moreland, Eastland, and Lorberg in Norfolk, and I'm the guardian ad litem for the children. What I would just add is one minor point regarding the record. Tony was already at home at this point. He had always been at home. Well, he had been removed initially for a brief period of time. But Tony and Alex had always been at home at this point, and the department had put in intensive family preservation and had spent a lot of money with having the people in the home, you know, 24 hours a day, but significant periods of time in the day throughout until we had got to this point. And so it was a bit unusual, I will admit, at the hearing, because we had a case plan that said close the case in 3 months and leave him at the home. And we had this incident at the school approximately 10 days or so prior to our hearing. And then the judge at that point decided he was going to remove Tony, this really applies to Tony, not Alex, from the home, and that it was going to be following the hearing. So that is what happened. You know, we can only base this on the record and what has happened into the future, which is one of the problems unusual issues with juvenile cases is we can't then go say, hey, here's what happened after that, because we only get to decide what happened then. But the judge has broad discretion, what is what I would say. Under 43-285, he can approve the case plan, modify the plan, do a different plan. Basically, the statute says you can do whatever you want. And all of the parties are aware of that. And so to say there's a due process problem, I would say there isn't, because everybody knows what the statute was and that he's allowed to do that if he wants, as long as it's not an abuse of discretion. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. Counsel is excused.
Thank you.
Thank you.